This is Ashley Bond, Miss Illinois USA 2009 and a member of the Chicago Lovables. And you're listening to Fred and Mark on the Chicago Bullseye.
What's going on? This is Joakim Noah of the Chicago Bulls, and you're listening to Chicago
Bullseye, NBA Finals edition of the Chicago Bullseye. I am your host, Mark Lewenthal. With me, as always, is the man, Steve Red Fred, a local celebrity in Chicago, Fred Pfeiffer. And on the call today, on the show today, we have another special guest, somebody that has been a frequent participant on this show, Tim Gallagher. Both Fred, Tim, welcome.
Thanks, Mark. Great to be here, Mark, as usual, my man. Good to finally get caught up. A lot going on.
For sure. Yeah, Fred, I'm sorry. I thought we were on Fred time here, which is why I called in. I was just waiting to get the text message because, you know, I never know the difference between Fred time and regular time. You know what I mean? So it's like, I'm glad that we were able to get this going, Fred, because I've been feeling a little, you know, that we the fans, man. It's the fans. We're just letting them down.
Well, Mark, one day I'm sure you'll realize when you have a 12- and 8-year-old that Fred time is often very – and it swings from the winds of your children, but I'm sure that will happen soon.
Lot to cover. What is the last show? I don't even know. I mean, we did something. I think we did at least one in the playoffs with the Bulls. But obviously, the Bulls, the season is over. I think it's an interesting off season myself. A lot of interesting stuff going on. I mean, you've got the draft, which I'm kind of disgusted by this whole draft process, this Lonzo Ball guy. I feel like they should just, not let him into the league. You got that to talk about, and then we got the finals here. Embarking Thursday, I think, is when it starts. So today is Tuesday when we record this, so we've got the NBA Finals right around the corner. So what do we start with, guys?
Well, the Ball comment, I think you and Tim are going to have an interesting conversation as we move on there. Why don't we start out with finishing up just a few more players. Just let's give them grades. Let's throw it around here for a few players. Mark, because I know Tim and I gave some grades on the last show. Let's throw out a few guys' names. We'll get into a finals preview. And then also, to me, the biggest question is, a question at hand, now that we're coming up on the draft and potential trades, do we trade Jimmy Butler or do we build around him? You know, let's get everybody's opinion. So let's start out with Denzel.
Let me ask you really fast though. If you did on the last show some grades, could you just throw me who you've done already, and I'll give you my grades, and let me know if you think anything I feel needs an explanation because you know what you guys discussed. So
yeah, just throw out a grade letter. I'm going to give you a name, okay, and then you throw out what you would give them, and we'll tell you if we had it, you know, drastically different or if it was right on, and you don't even have to comment. So, front office.
This season, I mean, our front office look, I feel like they were under a lot of scrutiny this season. I stood up for them at the beginning. Towards the end, it started to seem like they didn't really have a whole lot of direction. Do we want to make the playoffs? Do we not want to make the playoffs? I thought that they made a terrible trade with Taj Gibson, whether he was going to re-sign or not. He went out and he got somebody that didn't even play on our playoff roster. I thought the front office was kind of a mess this year. Now you've got this team with Dwayne Wade now on another contract, a huge contract for next year. So I'm going to say this season, I can't give him better than a – I mean, we made the playoffs, but, oh, man, maybe I'm going to give him a C. I was going to say D, but it's like you make the playoffs. It's hard to – and they kept Jimmy, which I thought was important, at least now. For this season, it was important. But, you know, they really didn't draft. This team was a mess, and it was a mess from the beginning. And there's always a few things missing, I think, very clearly from our team. A lot of the times it's offense, but it's obvious before the season begins, and I don't like that. So this season, maybe a C-.
All right, Tim gave him a B-. I can't remember what I actually gave him. Let me run over the grades and tell me if you differ greatly. Let's jump in there instead of running through each one, or the show will be too long. Team, B-. Coach Hoiberg, B. Butler, A. Feel free to jump in if you disagree.
The team, I don't know, man. I mean, I guess because of the playoffs, fine. I would agree with it because of the little run we made and we put a run against Boston, fine. Continue.
Wade, B+. Rondo, B-.
Yeah, I would say B. At the end of the season, he wasn't playing well when we needed him most. He didn't do anything, really, in the playoffs. I mean, I think it's difficult to give him any
time. Are you talking about Wade?
Time. Yeah.
Well, Wade had a great game two, a great game five. Here's a little quiz for both of you. Something like, you know, I think people are going way overboard about Wade Geer and acting like it was horrific. When you step back and look at it, he averaged over 18 points in right around 30 minutes per game. And, you know, obviously we just saw the retirement of Ginobili for San Antonio. Take how many times Ginobili averaged 18 or more points in his illustrious career.
You're right.
How many times.
They're not the same players. Couple, two or three.
Tim, do you know?
But they're not the same player.
I'm just pointing out.
I don't. You never really thought of him as, you know, in terms of statistics with Ginobili. It was more, you know, timely, great plays and, you know, whatever it took to win kind of plays versus a statistical kind of guy. But I would bet it's probably a lower career scoring average and, you know, probably fewer seasons under that benchmark than most people would think.
One time he averaged more than 18 points. So you're right, Tim. I mean, one time more than 18 points. So I'm just saying it's not an easy thing to do to average 18 points for a playoff team. And I don't think you should just say the guy had a horrible year in Wade's case, which is the general outlook.
Why are you saying that?
Well, I'm not saying
you
did,
but
I
didn't. I don't feel
a lot
that.
More negative
feel
than
like,
it should be.
I mean, he had a 1-for-10 effort in the playoffs. I mean, that's inexcusable. His field goal percentage in the playoffs kind of sucked. And, I mean, the 60 games, fine. I mean, he played 60 games. I don't know if we could have really expected much more. I'm still going to say, like, maybe a C+. Because, I mean, especially with the comments early on when he was going off on the bench, there were times where he was a distraction. But I thought that he played fine. I mean, so, again, I think a C+ is fine. If he had a B season, I would have been more than happy.
Ron,
well, Mark, as you're talking through –
go ahead. Go ahead, Tim.
Yeah, Mark, as you're assessing these, you know, Fred and I had similar struggles going through it because the Bulls season was so confounding, right, in terms of the highs and lows of the team, of Rondo, of Wade. But I tried to look at it from the big picture. Like at the beginning of the season, if someone said they're going to make the playoffs, they're going to play the number one seed, and it won't be Cleveland, and they're going to win two games against the number one seed on the road in the playoffs, I would have considered that a pretty successful season. Now, the road to get there, there was a lot of twists and turns. But so that's why it made it so hard to assess this team. And even with Hoiberg, you know, he's 41-41, and most people are calling him a bum. Or Spoelstra goes 41-41, and he's the co-coach of the year. So it was an odd season in terms of expectations and the ups and downs that we had to ride with on the Bulls bandwagon.
I think, though, for me, though, with Hoiberg, and actually I think that is one grade where I'll differ, is the fact that the team I feel could have been better. And I feel like, especially consistency in the rotations, when everybody acknowledges the fact that that was a problem, that people didn't know their role, it seems pretty blatant to me. When I've seen coaches do things that are very blatant to me, the fan, I think it's kind of ridiculous. Like, I mean, I think a big reason why, like, big shocker, Rajon Rondo was meaningful for this team. You know, big shocker. And, I mean, he jerked around Rondo like nobody's business. And Rondo could have just as easily come into this playoff not prepared. It's because Rondo's the player that he is and the professional that he is that he showed up. But, I mean, he threw him under the bus, and he was throwing, like, a different guy under the bus every other week. So I might actually say I might give him, we made the playoffs, and I can't deny that. But as a coach, I thought we would have been better. So I might say C-, not better. I agree with you, Tim. At the beginning of the year, if you told me these things, I would have been okay with it. But as the season started to progress, it was evident to me that we weren't always playing up to the level that, we could have been, especially at the point guard position.
Right. All right. Well, and the other odd thing, and I'm with you on those rotations, because if I'm looking at the roster that they ended the season with, and obviously McDermott and Taj aren't part of that discussion, but other than Butler, Wade, and Lopez, I believe every other player on the roster was a DNP coach's decision at one point or another during the season. Which, think about that for a minute, right? Which, and that, I'm talking to everybody from Rondo to Nico to Zipser to Portis, you know, guys that at times were key players in the Bulls' success. And I can't imagine that's happened very often, where guys fell out of favor enough that they were DNP coaches' decisions because they fell out of favor for what, you know, which is pretty stunning that it took, you know, that long to figure out who could play and who couldn't.
I totally agree. That's a great point.
I agree with you.
In defense of Fred there, though, I did also feel like, I mean, this team was just so hard to figure out. You would have guys at certain points of the year. I mean, Portis is a great example. He had great games against Utah, fantastic game against the Celtics during the regular season and in the playoffs. And then at other points of the season when he was getting minutes, I thought he was absolutely atrocious. I mean, it was such a roller coaster ride for some of these guys. You even look at Grant, who when he was given an opportunity sometimes performed well, shot the ball well from the field, and then other times when he was handed this opportunity on a, you know, basically just handed to him, he just sucked. He was so up and down. Every player on this team was up and down, and I guess that's what you should expect when you have so many young guys. So it shouldn't be out of the, you know, surprising, but it is disappointing. Without a doubt. And but that's a great point, Tim. I didn't even think about it. Out of those three, you're right. Probably every guy in the team, including Nico, had a DNP at some point of the season, which is, you're right, pretty rare.
Right, not due to injury. Due to
yeah, just
you know,
like you didn't want him to play.
Or playing poorly or all of the above.
Lopez.
Yeah, but don't you think so? And I agree with you. It's a miraculous that we did what we did, but considering. But I still feel like, I mean, there was no reason that Rondo should not have been our starting point guard for the whole season. Like, it was just nobody else earned it. And he was like, you know, Rondo wasn't even playing at times where the point guards above him were just playing horrible.
I disagree with you a little bit.
I never got it.
I disagree with you a little bit on that, Mark. I thought there was a part in the middle of the year where he wasn't playing well. Like, right around December or January, I thought he had a really bad stretch. The team wasn't playing well. He threw the towel at the coach. I mean, just some of that stuff, which is not good. And, you know, but I thought he handled it. He went through that. And I thought he really hit his stride when he was coming off the bench, kind of leading the second team and putting those guys in the position to succeed. But it wasn't all smooth sailing for Rondo. I mean, you're rewriting history here.
Well, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, did anybody else ever really earn his spot is all I'm saying. Like, when we started to bench Rondo, did anybody else really prove that they deserved his minutes?
No, I would answer that no, although I would have hoped that they would have maybe pieced it together more with Wade and Jimmy doing some of the ball handling, especially at key points in the game. But you're right. We talked about it on the last podcast that you look at that point guard backup group as a unit where it's Grant, Payne, NCW, and even, you know, Isaiah Cannon at times. And, you know, and those guys all had the red carpet rolled out to them. Kind of always like I thought the red carpet was rolled out for Snell to step up when he was a Bull, right? There were so many chances that, okay, here it is. Here's your opportunity. You know, you got guys injured or, you know, the spot's yours to lose, and he just never really got there. And that's kind of how it was with that whole group of point guards behind Rondo.
Totally agree.
Agreed. Well, then
next,
who else, Fred?
We had Lopez with an A, Nico with a D.
Agreed.
Nico with a D. And now we're getting into some players that we didn't discuss, so let's start going around that list. Let's start out with Zipser.
I'll start. This is Tim.
I'll
start with that one. And as a second-round pick that became a rotation guy and contributed, and I gave a B-plus for Zipser, a pretty good find for the second round. And I thought, as we talked about throughout the season on different podcasts, I thought he got minutes before what I'd seen. He really earned them. Now, I wasn't at practices, obviously, and didn't know all the other variables that were going on, but I was kind of stunned when he was getting such significant minutes earlier than I thought he deserved them. But over the course of the season, for a second-round pick rookie, I give him a very solid B-plus, and what a find for a guy to contribute that way as a rookie.
It's really hard to grade because it's like, do we want to go off of expectations? Because if it's expectations, I'm going to give it A-plus because it's like, we were going back, Fred, and when we did it in our episode after, like, game two, we went back and we were looking at, like, who were the second-round picks this year? When was the last time you had a second-round pick that did what he was doing in the playoffs that was even, like, playing? Like, you get, like, maybe a year that even, like, one or two that, like, even play on the team at all. So expectations, I had zero expectations for him. So the fact that he, like you said, did all that he did, I got to say, like, A-plus. But in terms of, like, as a player on the team, something in that range. I mean, he certainly played a big role for us down the stretch. Now, is he really a good player? I mean, maybe he could end up being a pretty decent player. I mean, it says a lot that he's able to be this composed, coming from where he came and being put in these positions that he was put in, that is, you know, his composure was good. So I somewhere between a B and an A-plus.
Yeah, I mean, based on expectations, B-plus, I think, is perfect. I agree with you completely, Tim. I didn't think he earned all the time that he was given early on, but he had an absolutely fantastic game two in the playoffs, and he stepped up big there. And he had some really nice moments for a second rounder. And if he can just hit the three, that's all I want him to do, and provide some defense occasionally, for a second round pick. I thought he had a really nice season. I'd like to see him just. In the summer, I always felt he looked a little bit out of shape or a little bit, tad bit overweight. I'd like to see him try to get in a little bit better shape. But, one thing I did see him, I saw him play for Windy City, and in that game, he clearly has the ability to drive off the fake and drive off the dribble, do some things off the dribble, surprisingly. So I think he's a little bit better athlete than people expect. And if he can continue to improve on the three, then we've hit a homer there in the second round. Next one that we haven't discussed, Denzel Valentine. Once you start out, Mark, on this one, we'll go to Tim and then me.
I mean, I have to almost give it incomplete. I mean, obviously he was in the doghouse with Hoiberg, from the things that he just never got a chance to play. And it's difficult when you get inconsistent minutes. We discussed it. I mean, it's difficult when you have inconsistent minutes to expect, especially a rookie, to come out and be able to be composed and play well. So, I mean, what was his season? I mean, we certainly all expected him to do more. I know, especially you, Fred, you're the king of overrating guys that can shoot threes. You see a lot of red.
How dare you.
So, I would say, B-plus. I mean, what more can it be? He didn't really do anything.
B-plus? Is that what you said?
He didn't do anything.
All right.
That's what
Tim,
I said.
Tim, what'd you say?
Well, I gave him a C, and I almost thought about incomplete also. He had a pretty impressive summer league and showed some signs of versatility and being willing to take, big shots. And, again, I know there's an asterisk there because that's in Vegas in the summer league. But I thought being a four-year guy at Michigan State, having the Izzo tough love and coaching for 4 years would have him a little more ready. You know, he did have that ankle injury at training camp, which I think was a big setback. But, the player that I saw in the playoffs that reminded me of what I think Valentine can be at minimum is Otto Porter. You're watching Otto Porter with the Wizards, and what Otto Porter was a top five pick, right? I mean, so the fact that Valentine came much, much later in the first round, I see very similar styles to their game, though. And obviously Porter's kind of the third or fourth wheel with the Wizards, certainly behind Wall and Beal, but I could see Denzel being that kind of player, and having that kind of versatility, playing the two, playing the three, even handling the ball on occasion. So that's what my aspirations are for him. Now, again, it also took Otto Porter a couple years to to get acclimated to the league and play at the level that he is. And again, he's not a star, but a pretty solid starter on a good team. And that's what I'm expecting we'll see from Denzel Valentine in the not too distant future.
I felt, well, without a doubt, he had ankle surgery after the season was over. So that said it all to me. I mean, he hurt his ankle, I think, in the first or second preseason game. He missed almost all the preseason due to an injury. And then he injured it again in the Charlotte game that I attended just after the new year. I think it was January 2nd. So he was injured a lot, number one, with that ankle. And that's a very, it's a very debilitating injury. And, I just didn't think he ever really really got the opportunity or the breaks this season. It was just a lost season for him. I think his ceiling is a lot higher than anyone else does. I know him alone on an island here. I think he has big shot ability, showed that at times. He had a huge game in the victory over Utah at home, hit three-pointers in the fourth corner. But he was kind of relegated this year just to be in the spot-up three-point shooter. And I think he can do so much more than that. I think he's a lot better athlete than people give him credit for. And he's long and long. His length always covers up for lack of athleticism. So I think the sky's much higher. The ceiling's a lot higher than most people do. And I think he's going to have a fantastic year next year. Let's go on.
Fred, what do you think of my Otto Porter comparison?
I think Otto is probably a little bit better athlete. I mean, but goodness gracious, if he can – start hitting the threes at that level. Otto Porter was top seven in the league in three-point shooting. And I love the analogy or comparison that, Otto Porter, it took a few years for him to really take that jump. But to me, that was the biggest difference with the Wizards this year was they lost Nene. And to me, the jump from Otto Porter was the biggest reason why they were much better. It's going to be interesting to see what they do with Otto Porter. He's a restricted free agent, I think. Is that correct? Do you guys know?
I think he'd be
pretty attractive. What would you give for Otto Porter, Tim?
It'll be the end of next year, wouldn't it? Isn't it restrictive? I think it's restricted next year. So this was his third year.
No, this is. I'm looking now. He just finished his fourth year in the league. So.
Oh, okay.
He's a restricted free agent. Yeah, just like that's interesting. So, I mean, it'll be interesting to see if anybody takes a run for him. I love the kid, although he did not – I don't think he played well in the playoffs at all. But, that's going to tend to happen. What do you think, Tim? What do you think? Would you give – what do you think he'll earn contract-wise?
That's a tough one. But I think he will be in demand. But, I'm looking at his career statistics, his rookie year with the Wizards, and he's the number three overall pick. And again, I'm using this as a comparison to Denzel now. And his rookie year, he played in 37 games and averaged 2 points a game.
Okay.
So three seasons later, he played in 80 games, 13.4 points a game, 51% from the field, 83% from the line, 43% from three.
Phenomenal.
Six rebounds a game. So, I mean, I think those are all achievable numbers for Denzel Valentine in a year or two. Right? I just see them as very similar style players.
That'd be great.
I'm not a huge Otto Porter fan. I'm a huge fan of his, but just seeing how he contributed and granted, he didn't play great against Boston. He had a few moments, but I guess the overall point is let's give Denzel some time because I think the potential is definitely there.
Amen. Let's go on to Portis, Bobby Portis. Tim, once you start off this one, we'll go to Mark and then me.
Okay. Well, as we talked about just on this podcast alone, that there was definitely some ups and downs. So times where he looked very lost out there, especially defensively. But then other games, I remember when the Bulls picked him, I was putting out some Robert Horry comparisons, just in terms of a guy that, with that size that had a good outside shot. And kind of had that kind of length. And so we saw that happen in a couple of key games and definitely a little bit in the Boston series. So, again, a young guy just left college early, which isn't anything unusual these days for most players, but just 2 years under his belt in the league, still kind of finding his way. I guess with a few of these guys that did have the DNPs, coaches' decisions with the Bulls, I was always pleasantly surprised how they seemed still engaged, right? I there were times where maybe they'd get in a garbage time or just rusty from not seeing significant game action. And then, you know, I watched body language and, you know, every little detail. And I was always impressed by Portis's just how engaged he was on the floor and his focus and effort, which I would – it was me, and I was on the bench for, you know, extended periods of time. I would be hard to stay positive. So that's another positive in terms of my assessment of him. But all that said, I gave him a C. I expected more, even though he is a young player only in his second year. And again, I think this is going to be another big summer for him. Hopefully he's dominant in the summer league. And the next season is, you know, there's no DMPs. He's in the rotation and getting significant minutes. But I think his length and shooting ability is something you got to take a long, long look at and let him develop a little bit more.
Mark?
Yeah, I mean, I'm probably going to agree with you. Like many of the guys on this team, there were a lot of ups and downs. It's tough. I mean, he's only 22 years old. His statistics actually dropped a little bit from his first season. I think we all had probably higher expectations for him going into this year, which may be unfair. I mean, he still is only 22 years old. I mean, I think he's definitely somebody, he's one of the few players on this team, and when we get into our little Jimmy Butler discussion shortly, you know, that'll probably come up again in terms of just my outlook of the team right now. He's one of the few players that I think might have some upside where he is somebody that can be a part of this rotation and part of whatever we build moving forward. You know, he didn't show me that he can't be. Unlike a guy like Nico, where I'm kind of like, all right, I throw my hands in the air, I'm done with this guy. Bobby Portis still has a lot of basketball he played. I'd like to see him just put on a little bit more weight, be a little bit more of a power forward. I mean, that's what he needs to do. I mean, that's the type of body that he has. He needs to be able to box out. He needs to be able to get rebounds consistently. I like the fact that he's got range, but I didn't think that he was really that great around the hoop. But he showed flashes. So I think at the end of the day, I'll give him a C as well.
Yeah, I'll go in with a C too. I felt, you know, the first half of the year was a disaster. I thought he was just awful. Defensively, I thought he was one of the worst players I've ever seen at the power forward position. I felt like Bobby Portis plays smaller than his height. I thought he plays at about a 6'6", 6'7", level. And, you know, a guy like Barkley plays like he's 7 feet tall and he's really 6'5". You know, he's just the exact opposite of that. But you did see progress, especially in the offensive end, the second half of the season. Had fantastic games. Utah, I was at, he was absolutely great in that game. And I saw a little bit of progress on the defensive end. He's just not a great athlete. He's not a good rim defender. That's a huge problem, right? You know, and I really hope he hits the gym, tries to increase his jumping ability, starts to learn to play taller, bigger, and really perfect that jumper. Because you saw in the Celtics game how good he can be from the outside. He was absolutely fantastic. So he's really going to need to bring it up on the offensive end because I don't think he's ever going to be a plus guy in the defensive end. But he started to show signs that he could do that. So I agree with you. I'll give him a C to overall.
It's an important position, man. I mean, in terms of defense, it can really hurt you to not have defense coming from a power forward position. So that's a big deficit if we're going to be putting the stock in him that it seems like we are.
Yeah, and, you know, to wrap this up, let's go. I mean, Anthony Morrow, I think we could all agree, you know, he's not going to be here next year, so
whatever,
we can just pass on him. But Laverne, do you think he'll be here next year? What's your take on him?
I thought he played better than I mean, he certainly had moments. I didn't really expect anything from him, and he had, you know, little moments. Whether he's back, it's such a tough call right now. He's going to be back next year. Like, because who do you fill in these positions with? There's a lot of guys that I knew I wouldn't necessarily bring back next year, but do I think that he could be back? Sure. We don't have a ton of guys to play center.
Tim?
Right. I think he's a serviceable backup. You know, more as a four, you know, occasionally at the five. But, you know, with Morrow, as well as he's always been touted as a shooter, you know, how many teams has he not been able to really crack the lineup to get minutes, right? It's just like, shooting is at such a premium, and that's his thing. So, and obviously the Bulls lack shooting. So for him to, again, one other team there where he's not been able to distinguish himself, you know, I think he's just, you know, relegated to a bench role player. And, you know, hard to really grade. I gave him a C, just, but again, sort of an incomplete. But again, my expectations were pretty limited.
Yeah, and Laverne, I'd give probably a D. I mean, that's the big problem with the Bulls. They have two major needs. They need to get more athletic, and they need to become a better shooting team. And very rarely do you find both of those skills wrapped up in one player. You know, usually the best shooters are a guy like Korver, and the best athletes aren't great shooters. And that's what's so frustrating here. And I put Laverne, and he's probably, you know, a decent shooter for his position. He's not a good athlete. You know, he's a guy, I agree, he can be a backup, I guess, a third center or third forward, but he's not going to move the needle for this team and get us any closer to a championship. So, you know, let's move on to the Jimmy discussion. That's the most important one right now, which I feel is, do we build around Jimmy? Do we trade Jimmy? You know, what say you? What do you think the best option is here for us going forward? Let's start out with Mark on this one.
I mean, I think it's a really tough call, and it's a million-dollar question. I mean, he'll be 27 at the start of next season. He's going to be 28. He's obviously in his prime. He's playing really good basketball, but the team's not very good. And a lot of teams right now are going to have cap space. Everyone has cap space. So, you know, I don't see us being able to really get the pieces that we need to make this team that competitive. Now, if we were going to trade him, I would need – you know, I would need, like, Boston's number one pick. I mean, like, and I don't think we'd ever get that, but it would be something like that, because it's like, why would you trade a guy that's this good unless you just want to be terrible? I mean, he's been everything we've wanted him to be. It's just a really tough call. How are we – at the end of the day, to me, it comes down to how do we make this team better with Jimmy Butler? And if I can't come up with a good answer for that, maybe we do have to trade him.
Tim?
Yeah, my intuition is to keep him and try to build around him, because, you know, if it was a trade like what Mark just said, and I wouldn't trade him for anything below a, you know, a top five pick, probably, right? And but, you know, the trouble is, you get one of those guys and they're a young player that it's going to take a few years, no matter how good they are, whether it's Fultz or Lonzo Ball or De'Aaron Fox or any of those guys, right? It's going to take them a little bit of time. And as we've talked about many times, when you look at these teams that are in the final rounds of the playoffs, there's no rookies or second, third year guys leading the charge, right? It's all veterans. And it's tough for rookies even to get in rotation minutes on really good teams. So I would say you've got a proven star, right? An all-star, you know, I don't know, we can assess where he is in the top players of the league, but, you know, probably a top 15 player in the league would be a very safe bar, and probably, it's probably even lower than that. So I would say build around him, and, you know, we talked about what an anchor Lopez is in the middle. Now, is he a championship center? I don't know. I don't think so, but you know, he's certainly a proven talent, and I'd say let's see if we can get some of these young guys to – continue to emerge and maybe get some more mileage out of Wade. And we talked about Rondo, even though he's aging a little bit, you know, we saw the best of what Rondo can do in those first two games at Boston. And you know, he's kind of played the same style for the last 10 years, more or less. So I don't know that he's, you know, has he lost a step or whatever. That's not how he plays. You know, it's kind of a combination of craftiness and court vision and versatility. So, you know, hopefully he can stay healthy. You know, with Wade, 60 games last year was a little below what I'd hoped, not too far below, as Mark mentioned. I was hoping for maybe 65, 67 games. So I would say let's try to get another solid player where they're drafting. You know, someone, you know, Portis and Denzel Valentine, I thought were very solid picks. Now they've still got some work to do, and they got to prove they're worthy of the minutes that we think that they're going to eventually earn. So I would say continue to build with what we've got, although I would not be heartbroken at all if Nico was left out of the picture.
Yeah, I think we're in a tough spot here.
The one thing I want to add is I just want to say one quick thing. I think we need to ask ourselves as a fan base, if we are okay with this team not you're always playing, obviously, to try to win a title. You're always trying to put in the pieces. But, and we, you know, a couple years ago, thought that maybe under the right circumstances, maybe we had a chance. But I don't see this team ever winning a title. Like, I just don't see it. With Jimmy Butler as your best player, you're right. I think he's a top 15 player, probably better than that. I mean, he's an all-star starter, which is saying something. I think he's one of the three best shooting guards in the league, for sure. But the team's kind of a mess. There's a lot that they'd have to do to be competitive. Now, am I okay with us, you know, riding out Jimmy's career here and putting in a couple other players around him to make this team, you know, a clear-cut playoff team, and maybe under the right circumstances they could give one of these other teams a fight? I'm okay with that, because how many teams really have a chance at winning a title? But do I really think that we realistically are playing for that anytime in the near future? No. So it's a question of what do you want? Do you want to tank, or are you cool with just being a playoff team?
Well, they're already competitive, Mark. They were 41-41. They took the Celtics, the number one seed. They won the first two games. Rondo got hurt, and they lost their rebounding edge, and you know, they lost the next four. The question is, you know, if they add a Paul Millsap to play the power forward position, is that delta? I mean, obviously a huge upgrade from what we have right now, but is that enough to bring us to beat Cleveland and LeBron still playing at a high level? And the answer is clearly no. So that's where I kind of come to. You know, like, are we going to ride out LeBron? I mean, he's starting to show some cracks at 32, but I'd say he still has at least three good years. So you look at Jimmy Butler. Jimmy Butler has two more years on this contract, which is a bargain right now relative to what other superstars are making. But the fact is, after those 2 years are up, he's going to be making insane amount of money with the new collective bargaining agreement, now that he made the, you know, all-pro team, third team. He's going to be making, I think, over $30 million, taking up, you know, 25 to 30% of the cap. Is Jimmy Butler at that age, with all these miles on him, being tibbed and, you know, playing a significant amount of minutes these last 2 years, is he going to be great from ages 29 to 34? I don't think so. I don't think he's going to age really well. And, you know, I lost a lot of faith in Jimmy in this past playoffs. I thought game three, I still have no idea. I've said this many times. I have no idea what he was doing in game three. They were up 2-0. And how do you have a game as Jimmy Butler with no free throw attempts and no assists? And that game was for our we made a run in the second quarter, bring it to, you know, basically a 2-point game at halftime, and you come out and play like crap again. It was one of the worst games I've ever seen for a superstar. Game five, right there for us going into the fourth quarter, and he goes 0-for-2. Mark, are you in a tunnel or something? What's going on out there?
I'm listening to you. Go on.
Okay. And so he just, you know, sucks it up there. I'd look to trade him and try to get as much talent as possible, because I think now's the time to do it, because it's not going to be there. And it's not going to be – I don't think that offer is going to be anywhere near as good what you're going to be able to get for him in a year or even two. To that end, I was in L.A. this week, and a lot of rumors out there that the Lakers would be willing to offer the following for him. I'd like to hear your opinion on it. D'Angelo Russell and Brandon Ingram. Would you make that trade for Jimmy Butler? Tim.
Well, I'm not a huge fan of Russell and Ingram, and obviously being out on the West Coast, I see a lot of the Lakers, and I have a lot of concerns about the Lakers roster. You know, I think those are all just a bunch of guys. And I, you know, granted, they're young. The Lakers have been through some coaching changes, the Kobe, you know, exit and so on. But I don't know. I just don't see, you know, great. I don't see Russell or Ingram becoming all stars in the league. You know, I don't see either one of them ever achieving what Jimmy Butler's achieved. And so, yeah. Well, the other question I'll pose to you guys on the same topic is: do you think Boston chose not to try to acquire Paul George or Jimmy at the trade deadline, if they didn't really think they'd put them over the hump, or they were, or Ainge was more protective of keeping that pick and seeing who that might turn out to be?
I mean, they got the number one pick. You knew that they had a very good shot of getting it, and they got, you know, with that team that they have right now, I mean, I don't think personally that I think they saw this. That does Jimmy necessarily put you over the top? No. If you get that young pick, by the time that they develop, and yeah, it's a question mark whether they do or they don't, but by the time that they develop, LeBron James is going to be gone. At this point, there's nobody in the East that is on a path to start contending with anybody at the top, really. I mean, it's Boston. And to think that this team now has this number one pick, they've got an extremely bright future. I think it was smart to not try to trade that for a guy that's not necessarily going to move the needle because this next guy could. You don't know. The point, I mean,
I think that's insane to say. Hold on a second. I think that's insane to say he wouldn't move the needle. He's exactly what the Celtics needed. They had no one to tire out LeBron on the one end, on the offensive end, and they had no one to really put defensive pressure on him. Jimmy Butler's tailor-made to be that. He's a poor man's LeBron. He's exactly what you would want to add. So to say that he wouldn't have made a difference is insane. Would it have been enough that they would have won? I don't think so. But I don't think Boston has a choice. That's the issue here. I don't think everybody's missing. It's, they owe $30 million to I mean, they're going to owe $30 million. Look at their salary cap issues right now, right? Isaiah Thomas makes $6 million this year, $6 million next year. He's going to want to get paid. Al Horford makes $30 million in 2020. How are you going to bring in Jimmy Butler and expect to re-sign him when you're going to have Isaiah Thomas making max dollars, Al Horford making the same amount of money? You're going to have, what, paid $90 million to three guys? It's not going to happen. They never once unprotected that pick. That's why the deal wasn't made. And I agree with the Bulls. You don't give up Jimmy Butler for a pick that, you know, Boston gets to keep if they get the top three picks. So that deal was never there, and I don't think Boston was ever serious about giving it up. And I'd be shocked to see them give that up because now they're going to get a very good player that's going to control the salary for the next, you know, five, six seasons. So it's a huge advantage for them, and they would be with their current situation where they still have to pay Thomas.
Well, right. Well, I agree with you, Fred. But financially, it wouldn't have made sense. You're absolutely right. And
I think it's interesting, Tim. What do you think about all the rumors about, you know, with his history, you know, possibly. I don't know if you heard this, but they have quite a bit of space. Gordon Hayward going there as a free agent. They could sign him as a free agent. Do you think that's likely?
Well, certainly from a basketball romance standpoint, the fact that he played for Brad Stevens at Butler and, you know, get them reunited and, you know, and Hayward kind of fits that Celtic profile. But I mean, the amount of money that, you know, he'd have to leave on the table is so extreme, and you know, it's money obviously that the three of us can't understand or relate to, but I think it's just leaving too much money on the table to not stay with Utah. And it's not like Utah's a bad situation. They've been on a nice rise. Gordon Hayward individually has been on a nice rise, you know, year after year in terms of his stats, you know, kind of similar to looking at a Jimmy Butler or a Kawhi Leonard. Like each year, it's wow, he's really, you know, stepped it up each year, and now on a playoff team, and, you know, no disgrace losing to Golden State. You know, Golden State's beating everybody, but the fact that the Jazz have gotten into the playoff picture and seem headed, you know, in a really positive path. So I don't really see Hayward leaving, although there are some interesting twist to it, just again with the Stevens and Butler connection, but I just can't imagine these guys leaving that much money on the table.
It seems to me, though, that every single time one of these things comes up, if the guy wants to leave, they're going to do a sign and trade anyway so that he still gets his money. So I think it comes down at the end of the day to how much he really wants to play in Utah, and I don't think you are going to be sniffing a finals
didn't happen with Al Horford
in the West.
Didn't happen with Al Horford, though. Didn't happen with Al Horford. He just left. I don't know. I think this situation is really unique in that I think that he does have that personal relationship. It's not – it's so much money. I mean, he's still going to be making a ton if he goes to Boston. You know, it's not like he can't – and I kind of feel like anybody who's really serious about winning, you got to get out of the West. because you're not going to beat Golden State. If Golden State is this team for the next 3-4 years, your only chance is going out to the East and competing there. Because it's just going to be a
Boston. What's a better situation than Boston? There's no better situation than Boston. It's unbelievable unbelievable how dumb the Nets are, but it's unbelievable what they've done. And as far as your trade scenario, Fred, for the Lakers, in my opinion, absolutely not. They could throw in Lonzo Ball, and I wouldn't do that. No way. I would absolutely.
Are you serious? Hold on a second. You're not going to trade
Ingram? I know that
Ingram?
Everybody would disagree with this.
Yes, I hope so, because it doesn't even have to be Ball. Since we're on that topic, Tim, why don't you – let's debate Ball for a second. Because I would like to hear, Tim, let's give your reasons why. You think Ball should be number one overall. Give your case for Lonzo Ball.
Well, I will, and I've had the benefit of seeing him play in person probably, well over 10 times since his sophomore year of high school. And in the 50 years I've been watching basketball closely, there haven't been many occasions when I've walked into a gym or an arena and had that lightning bolt strike me like, oh my gosh, this is a transcendent talent. This is like watching Magic Johnson his freshman year at Michigan State, who I saw play in person. You know, it's very similar to that. And so just the way, and I'm talking Lonzo Ball between the lines on the floor. I know there's some noise with his father, who I think really is just a big teddy bear. And I'm sort of shocked that the media is so enamored with giving him so much airtime. And it's kind of an odd dynamic because I've seen the boys play over a number of years in person, and they're very humble, excellent teammates, quiet, do the right things on the floor. Then the dad is this other extreme, blowhard. But anyway, back to Lonzo, just his ability to lead a team and how he transformed UCLA from a losing team 2 years ago to being in the top five. They got to the Sweet 16, lost to a very good Kentucky team who UCLA had beaten earlier in the season. But just the way he transformed the whole energy of the UCLA program and how easy he made the game for his teammates and without scoring. The best analogy I could give you is the way Rondo played in the first two games at Boston. Lonzo Ball is capable of doing that on almost any night. And I'm 100% confident when I say that. Now, other really good players in the draft, De'Aaron Fox, Fultz, of course. What's interesting, though, is how everybody jumps on the fact that Fox outplayed Ball in the NCAA tournament, which he did. And I think in some ways Ball was more outnumbered and outplayed. It was part of that, but really outnumbered just Kentucky's, loaded with talent like they usually are. Not that UCLA was bad, but the fact that when UCLA played at Washington, when Fultz was healthy, UCLA beat them by 41 points at Washington, 107-66. Look it up. And then when Washington had their rematch game at UCLA, Fultz didn't even dress. And they said he was, nursing an injury, which I think it was more of he probably could have played if the game would have meant something, but the team was terrible and it would have probably hurt his draft stock. So I'm very high on Lonzo in terms of the Jason Kidd, Rondo, even a little dash of Magic Johnson comparisons, I think none of those are out of line.
It's so tough for me, just a fan, to deal with listening to this father. And I know it shouldn't make a difference, but to be turning down the shoe companies, to not be working out for Boston, who is the number one pick, everything about that, because he still is the player at the end of the day. If he wanted to work out for Boston, he would. That was the kicker for me. Like, yeah, his dad can talk and talk and talk and make shoes and say that he's not going to sign with the big shoe companies and request just ridiculous things. But to not work out for the team that has the number one pick, to me, says that you think you're bigger than the game, that you think you can call the shot as a rookie and is not a good judge of character. Now, also, I'm an Arizona fan, and I watched him play against Arizona, where he was absolutely terrible the last time that they played Arizona. Now, to be fair, I do think Ball he injured himself that last game against Arizona that Arizona won. And he hasn't really been the same since then. Like, he, like, twisted his ankle or something. I can't remember. I think that's what he did. But
he jammed his thumb, like the ball bounced off of his thumb. So he was playing with an injured thumb. I don't know if it was broken. But, yeah, he wasn't at 100%. And again, the losses UCLA had this year, and I watched literally every game because he was so compelling. I either watched it when it was happening or went to it or recorded it because it was magical watching the way he played. And, you know, of course, they did lose a couple times to Arizona, who was a team I'm kind of shocked didn't make the Final Four. They lost to Kentucky. They lost to Oregon. So the teams they lost to were, you know, it was no disgrace losing to those teams. But just his unselfishness and court vision and versatility is, you know, I think pretty remarkable. And I think sooner than later, it'll be well known among NBA fans when he's leading a team. I'm surprised that Boston isn't making a little stronger push to, you know, I don't know what links they've been held back in terms of not even getting him to work out, but I would think Ainge at minimum would use this chance just to jerk the Lakers and Magic's chain a little bit, because he's holding the cards. So even if they aren't going to take him, you know, just to make the Lakers sweat a little bit, you know, and make it like they will.
You know, jump in here about Bull.
Make them trade something to get that top pick. Make a trade so that they can secure Ball. If that's, I agree with you. But,
so to jump in here about Bull,
they're pretty confident.
Yeah, I gotta say, I mean, Tim, you brought up a good point. His team lost 107-66 at home to UCLA. In that game, though, Fultz had a good game. He had 25 points. He was 5 of 10 in 3-point range. He had a really good game, although he did have 5 turnovers, but his stat line was pretty good. But you're right, his team got killed. You can't always go by that, though. I mean, I go back to Paul George, who, you know, everybody said, how good can he be? His team wasn't that good. I think his team, I can't recall, but they were barely 500, right? Wasn't he Fresno State? Back in the day,
yeah, Fresno. I think they were okay, but they weren't. Well, Kyle Simmons is another example, right?
Another example. Even Kevin Durant, I would point at, who, you know, he made Texas better, but they never had a lot of NCAA tournament success with Kevin Durant. You know, so you know, it's just a little bit. I understand people make that point. Well, you know, his team lost so much, but I just hear so many people talk about how great this guy is. And I don't know, I just on tape, I think he looks a little bit like a tweener a little bit to me. He doesn't seem like he's a plus athlete. He's a good athlete, but not, you know, just jump off your board athlete. Could be interesting to see what happens. But it seems like right now he's unquestionably what most people feel should be the number one pick. Fultz is.
Well, I'm sure the Lakers would be thrilled for that to happen.
Yeah.
For sure, and he still had those assists. I mean, he still had almost 6 assists a game on an awful team, and it's tough because, yeah, Washington stunk. They were the second worst team in the Pac-12. They won 2 games in the conference, in all of conference play. It's difficult to compare him, and it was difficult to compare statistics, especially things like assists when UCLA had guys around them, Lonzo Ball. It's just a different game.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. And to wrap this up, because I only got about 10 more minutes, let's get a little bit of finals talk. You know, we'll get into the draft as we get closer and more throughout the month, and we get closer to the end of the month. But, wow, we got a really good one coming up here. I see Vegas has it, the odds are that the game's going to go 5 games, 4-1 to Golden State. Why don't we give your predictions and go around with your predictions and you know, tell us what you expect to see, what to look for. We'll start with you, Tim.
Well, we've got, for the first time in NBA history, the same 2 teams meeting 3 years in a row, which, you know, it was against the odds in my playoff prediction. I took the Wizards just to do something a little different, and figuring that the odds of the history of the league would lean my way, although we were a little skeptical about Cleveland kind of tanking some of the season and not having the number one seed, which kind of stunned me that Cleveland even with their resting LeBron and sacrificing some games during the season, I thought they would still find a way to keep the number one seed. So I was a little skeptical on Cleveland's ride, but that's what I get for underestimating LeBron. And my prediction for the finals is that I'll take Golden State in six, and I think there's a little extra motivation because Durant's there. You know, I wasn't crazy about that because, you know, they kind of stacked the deck, so to speak, although it was certainly Durant's choice to do that, and it fulfilled his contract with OKC. So I think there's some motivation there. It is a little weird with Steve Kerr and his health issues and him not being on the sidelines. And although I think Mike Brown is a competent coach, is he a great coach? I wouldn't say great, but I think he's a competent coach. And for someone that's in Popovich's lineage of assistants and people that have coached in the league, he certainly has some ability. And I don't think it's quite as simple as you just roll out the ball and Curry and Durant and Thompson and Draymond will take care of the rest. I think, that's a little bit of a stretch. However, those guys are pretty, pretty much a well-oiled machine and motivated after losing last year. Cleveland, I have to say, I wasn't expecting, other than that little blip on the radar where they lost at home to Boston, which was a strange game, but they really cruised through the playoffs. The acquisition of Korver, Deron Williams, I think, there's a little motivation on their side, just like Durant doesn't have a ring yet. Those two guys, I think, are solid veterans, and I think LeBron would probably like to see, for a number of reasons, see a championship come their way again. So all that said, I'm going to go with the Warriors in six. And this is the matchup I guess we all wanted, and we're going to get it.
I see a lot of people complaining about this matchup and just how, the NBA, you're kind of just waiting for this and, the rest of the playoffs doesn't matter. And I don't know. In my personal opinion, over the last, 10 years, it's just been the fact that, okay, well, it was just that the two best teams. You typically don't have that many teams that really have a legit chance of winning. In the past, they just all used to be in the West, and now it just so happens that the two best teams are in different conferences. That's great, in my opinion. It's cool to see that these teams are going against each other now, and we've got a kind of modern-day Lakers-Celtics from the 80s. Everything inside me is saying the Warriors, but I want to be different, and I want the Cavaliers to win. I really want the Cavaliers to win, because I really feel like if this happens, obviously LeBron making these finals is great, but one of my friends the other day saying, well, he's made all these finals, so obviously he's better than MJ, and that matters to some degree when people are thinking this, and it's like, well, LeBron's played in the East, and there's been nobody, the Bulls are probably the best team that he's ever had to go through in the East to get to this point in his career. So, this is where he can really establish himself as being the greatest of all time, if that's what, if that's in the cards for him. So I really want to see it. I think it makes for an intriguing match. If he wins, then it's so intriguing and fun to watch. So I want the Cavs to win. So I'm going to pick Cavs in seven, but my heart is really telling me the Golden State. It's how can you – come on. The starting lineup is just insane.
I felt that the Celtics missed a ton of open three-pointers, open jumpers. I didn't think the Cavs played great defense at all. I don't think they played great defense in any series with the possible exception. I really don't think they played great in any series. I'll take that back. I didn't even think Indiana had their moments. And if you play defense like that against the Golden State Warriors, they're going to kill you. And I think this is just the way that Durant is playing defensively. This is the best. I thought last year he really stepped up his defensive game. I thought he was excellent in the playoffs on the defensive end. And I think he's got more to lose than anyone. If Durant comes to this Golden State team and he loses this year, just think about LeBron beats him with, basically the same team. Think about what that's going to do to his legacy. So I think Durant's going to play just as hard as he possibly can. He's going to do everything he can to win this, and I just think they have way too much. I'd be shocked if this is anything other than the Cavs in five. Golden State in five. I don't think it'd be great, because wouldn't it be great, if the Cavs win the series?
Yeah, and for Kevin Durant, that jerk off going over there. He'll play with a team that won 73 games last year. This would be the ultimate kick in his nuts. You're right. He has everything to lose. I mean, this is it. This is what his whole career, he banked on going there. The only thing he can do is win. If he does not win, this whole thing is an absolute disaster.
Yeah. I think Kevin Love's been playing great. I think that, you know, obviously Irving's been playing great. If LeBron keeps on shooting 42% from three, which he's done for the playoffs, this is going to be a very difficult series. I just don't see it happening. I don't think he can keep up at that pace, especially, you know, when you throw Draymond Green on him a little bit. It's going to be a lot tougher than it has been so far in any other series so far. So, both states are really
player
good.
For player, when you line it up, player for player, I do say to the Cavaliers, I don't think anybody's giving them enough credit because, like, honestly, like, even as the starters, I think that the Cavaliers are better at center. I think they're better at small forward. And, obviously, like, is it really – once you get taken into account the fact that the point guard can't take over the game because there's other guys out there that need the rock too, is Kyrie Irving really that much of a downfall – that much of a detriment compared to Steph Curry? Because Curry's not going to have the ability to score 35 points every single night. It's really – to me, it's Klay Thompson. That's the one guy where it's like they don't have an answer to play. But, like, they made some good moves, getting in Korver, getting in Darren Williams. The Cavs made good moves. I think they've got the depth. It's really just a question of is everyone going to be clicking on Golden State every single night, and are they going to be playing? Are they really going to be sharing the ball? Because if there's any sort of a hiccup, I don't think people are giving the Cavs enough credit. I feel like they really do have the talent. They're not as good as Golden State, but I don't think it's that off, personally.
No, I think it's pretty close. Yeah, I think they're pretty aligned in terms of the rosters, and everybody's healthy this year because you could look at the last couple of years and there were injuries that impacted the outcome of the series, you know, with Curry hurting his knee in the Houston series. You know, you wonder how close to 100% he was, and then obviously a couple of years before with Love and Kyrie being out. So it's nice that everybody's healthy, I guess, except Steve Kerr, unfortunately, is not. But as far as at least the guys on the hardwood, we've got everybody at full strength. So it'll be fun from that standpoint. And, yeah, I would give Cleveland's bench a slight nod. I mean, you know, you look at guys like Channing Frye, Darren Williams, Korver. They're obviously rested now that they've had this break as the final start. And what Golden State doesn't have is they don't have Harrison Barnes. They don't have Barbosa. They don't have Bogut. You know, so there's a couple key elements that I thought helped Golden State in the past couple of seasons that aren't there now.
So you think that there's a chance that do you think that people are kind of writing off Cleveland a little bit too early? Maybe not from your prediction. Maybe you don't feel that way.
Well, I think it'll go six. I still think Golden State's going to have a little too much firepower, but I think they're pretty evenly balanced teams. I think five games, as Fred, you said Vegas said five. I think that's a little disrespectful to Cleveland.
It's going to be enjoyable no matter what, because they are two excellent teams, and these are clearly the best two in the, you know, in the league this year. So, boy, though, like I said, if LeBron wins this series, somehow pulls this out, then let's start having the conversation. I'm all on board for it then, because, I mean, if you're beating this team, That's an accomplishment. That's a major accomplishment. So, I mean, I thought beating them last year was
an
accomplishment.
When you say it, Fred, when you say it, you know that that's big. When you are saying that there is a chance that LeBron can be part of that conversation, you know, when you're seeing, you know, maroon instead of red, then that you know that that's meaningful. Because you have been very, very adamant about Jordan being better. And I agree with you. He needs this. But if he gets this, you can't really – and it's unfair because it's not like the guy hasn't accomplished a ton of things in his career, but the one thing that he didn't accomplish was that he got a couple championships and a lot of trips to the finals on a super team that he created in the East. He needs to prove that he could beat these teams.
I mean, I'll admit, see, the issue with LeBron is he's still always going to have 2011 on his resume. That happened. He was outplayed by Dirk Nowitzki. That never happened to Jordan. Jordan always dominated the finals. He won six finals. So, to me, that's always going to be, you know, he's always going to have that. And so it's going to be really difficult for him to surpass Michael. But when you start collecting victories, championships, like if he gets this one, where you're beating a team with four all-stars, you know, I think you can make the case. I think you can make the argument that this Golden State team is better than any team Jordan played in the finals. Even though, you know, he did play a great Utah team twice with two, you know, Hall of Famers on it. You know, this is definitely better than the Sonics team Michael beat. This is definitely better probably than the Portland Trailblazer team that he beat. I thought that Phoenix Suns team with Barkley was very good, but I'd still give the nod to Golden State. And the Lakers team with Magic, who was still in his prime at that time, I'd still even say this Golden State team is better. The only team you can maybe make the argument is Utah, who did have two Hall of Famers, but I'd still give the nod to Golden State. When you have Durant, I mean, if a victory over this team would be really something that would, like I said, at least you can have the conversation. I think it's even ridiculous to have the conversation now. But, you know, if he loses, then it's just another loss, right?
Well, he won last year. And, I mean, that's still meaningful. But, yes, Golden State was not playing at their peak last year. So this is you got to do it when they're at their best. And then that'll shut everybody up.
Anyway, look at it. It's going to be exciting. It'll be enjoyable. Guys, I got to hit the ground running now. Really appreciate your time. Both of you guys for jumping on. It's a good discussion. And let's do it again soon. Hopefully shortly thereafter, or maybe sometime next week while the finals are going on, and give the opinion. And we'll start covering some of these guys in the draft that hopefully will fall to the Bulls.
I look forward to it.
Absolutely. Well, enjoy the finals, guys. Always great to catch up and talk basketball, talk Bulls, and great, you know, seeing the level of talent that we're going to see in the NBA Finals is pretty, you know, pretty unprecedented, right? And I guess maybe you can go back to some, you know, Lakers, Celtics teams in years gone by with number of Hall of Famers, but kind of in the modern era, you know, the number of Hall of Famers that, you know, are on both sides of the ball in these Finals are going to be fun to watch.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I can't wait. I can't. It's going to be a great Finals. But Tim, thanks a lot for being on the show. And, Fred, keep annoying Waddle and Sylvie.
You got it, my man. You got it, brother. All right.
So until next time, in April. See you then.